Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff, in for Alan on his usually Tuesday shift. Today we're talking freedom, which according to the dictionary can mean exemption from external control, the power to determine action without restraint, or national independence. It leads us to Independence Day, celebrated tomorrow on the 4th of July, a day when we as Americans are supposed to celebrate our freedom as afforded by our forefathers with the signing of the Declaration of Independence way back in 1776. We know the historical significance of the day, but what about the idea of freedom? Are we, as the citizens of a nation, any more or less free than when we declared ourselves as such those 200-plus years ago? What's your idea of freedom? 800-348-2551 is our telephone number, 1-800-348-2551. Whether you spend tomorrow at the grill or the ballpark or you lounge in front of the TV, I might do a little of that. We want to know what freedom means to you at 1-800-348-2551. Now, the Declaration of Independence, a big deal. I would argue, of course, the Constitution, a bigger deal. And at the time of the Constitution, you know, there were those who said, well, wait a minute. Now, there is not a specific list of rights here. And so the Bill of Rights was born. And there were those who said, you know what? No way. This Bill of Rights is a bad idea. Alexander Hamilton said, I'll go further and affirm that bills of rights, in the sense and in the extent in which they are contended for, are not only unnecessary in the proposed Constitution, but would even be dangerous. They would contain various exceptions to powers which are not granted, and on this very account would afford a colorable pretext to claim more than were granted, for why declare that things shall not be done which there is no power to do? So, I guess that gets to the point, you know, has government now encroached in the last 200 years on your freedom? Certainly has improved the situation in many ways. But compared to 200 years ago and compared to what the forefathers intended, are we less free? 800-348-2551. Or just what is your idea of freedom? Let's go to the phones. Jeff in Westerlo. Jeff, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I read something called the Hurrem, and the Hurrem says, for 20 hours of labor, everyone in the world has the right to have education primarily, health care, basic food, and basic shelter. And for 20 hours, if everybody worked 20 hours in the world, we could easily afford to do that. And that's basic freedom. Without those four things, you don't have freedom. It's just an illusion.
Interesting. So, but why just 20 hours? How did they come up with that?
Because right now you have people working. I'll give you a personal instance. When I was younger, I worked a 40-hour work week as a blue-collar worker.
Okay.
Had an hour off for lunch, which gave me a 35-hour work week because I was a paid lunch.
Mm-hmm.
I had a half-hour break on either end of my shift. So now I'm down to 30 hours, and that was 25 years ago, a little more.
Okay.
And supported a family of four, and sent them to school and had a quality of life that was excellent. Now, what the hell went wrong? Why are people working 60 and 80 hours a week with the kind of technology we have today? And the Hurrem, this human energy renewable measurement, actually spells this thing out. There's a website out there, and that's where we got the 20 hours from.
Okay. Well, yeah, I don't know what to say. I mean, I don't think I could work 20 hours. I think, you know, I like to work.
No, you don't have to work more than 20. You don't have to work less than 20 hours. But if you basically, if you have a wife who isn't working, she is actually working to produce keep you alive with food and education for your kids.
Yeah.
And you know, that's all should be part of the GDP, which it's not. But if you included that, and a country is based on how they treat their the whole, I guess Hazel Henderson calls it the love economy, but there's other words for it. But basically, if everybody works 20 hours, well, you can work as much as you want, but there's a certain point in time where if you're making so much money or so many hours of labor, you know, you're hoarding hours of labor, not money. Money is just a form of currency.
Okay.
But you're actually, you need to put that back because of your inherited knowledge. Like you didn't wake up one day and know how to run the radio show or drive your car. That's inherited knowledge. It took thousands and millions of years to get that inherited knowledge that you were born into. So you've got to put that back so the guy sweeping the floor in your office can go ahead and put his kid through college.
Yeah.
Does that not make sense? And that's cool freedom. And once more people get educated, more professors like Shark Talk and more doctors, then everybody has a better fighting chance. And if everybody works 20 hours, people wouldn't be unemployed.
All right, man. Well, Jeff, thanks a lot. And a happy 4th to you. Happy Independence Day. That's a good way to start the show. 20-hour week. I'm sure that there is a resounding chorus of cheers going up in the control room right now. Zach, the engineer, is giving me a thumbs up. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. 800-348-2551. What is freedom to you on this Independence Day Eve? Ian in Amsterdam. You're up, Ian.
Hi, my name is Ian, and I am concerned about possible violations of our Fourth and Sixth Amendment rights.
Okay.
I feel that police have been using terrorist tactics, kicking in doors, for people who are violating our marijuana laws.
All right.
I just don't think that if somebody's growing marijuana, that the police should be able to kick in doors when they can simply just pull them over on a traffic infraction, get their keys, go in and unlock their doors. There's no need to use SWAT teams to go in and arrest nonviolent offenders. I just think using violent tactics against somebody who's peaceful is just extremely abusive.
So the Fourth Amendment,
for somebody growing plants it just seems unreasonable and unconstitutional and immoral.
All right. The Fourth Amendment says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause. So I think that'd be a tough one to fight. And Amendment 6 is the right to a fair trial. Not sure about that. Let's go to Malcolm in Sunderland. Malcolm.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Hey, how's it going?
Going pretty well. I love the topic. It's a good thing to think about. My idea when I think about freedom, basically, first of all, I think about responsibility.
Yeah.
It's not gonna work without it, as we can see in many cases. But the thing that mainly comes to mind is a great Solomon Burke song. It's called "None of Us Are Free," and yeah, the main line in it is that none of us are free when one of us is chained. And you know, to me, there's a very resonating truth in that, which is that, you know, these things that we do that we think of as free, especially here in the United States, but in any of these countries where people claim freedom and think of freedom, most of them either have cost someone else in the past or are costing someone now or will cost someone tomorrow pieces of their own freedom. And I think that's a very important thing for us to all think about as we go through our lives, is our freedom costing someone else their freedom that unfortunately in the long run might make them, you know, hate us, as people have said in the past, you know, oh, they hate us because we're free, this and that and the other thing with terrorism. Well, you know, maybe they hate us because we're being irresponsible with our freedoms and or taking away freedoms from them.
You know, you bring up a good point. And for some odd reason, Malcolm, by the way, 800-348-2551 is the number, 800-348-2551. For some odd reason, in doing the show prep after lunch today, I ended up reading George Washington's farewell address.
Mm.
And I got to tell you, you know, the wording is a little obtuse, perhaps, because it's a couple of hundred years old, but fascinating stuff. And he talks about not really interfering with other countries except in a commercial way, you know, basically not imposing will unless absolutely vital to our interests.
Sure.
And the other thing he brings up, which I think is germane to what you're talking about, what you first mentioned, was morality. And how vital it is. And I'll if you permit, and you don't have to hang on the line, but I'll read you just a little bit of this that I printed out.
Love to hear it.
Whatever may be conceded to the influence of refined education on minds of particular structure, reason, and experience, both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious principle. All right. You guys can argue with that all you want. It is substantially true that the virtue of morality is a necessary spring of popular government. Promote, then, as an object of primary importance, institutions for the general diffusion of knowledge in proportion as the structure of a government gives force to public opinion. It is essential that public opinion should be enlightened. So is the country now at a point where we have lost our moral compass, in which case freedom then, at least as I'm reading George Washington, would be in dire peril.
I couldn't agree more. I think that that's part of what's going on. It's, you know, there are a lot of positive things in this country, a lot of, you know, people doing positive things and looking towards positive futures, but there's a lot of, unfortunately, people who are doing exactly as George Washington implied, and as you know, the whole topic implies of responsibility, are not living up to the responsibilities of the freedoms we have and are costing a lot of people, unfortunately, some really bad situations in the world, hardships and lack of freedom.
You know, my friend, I appreciate the call. I hope you have a very good Independence Day.
Happy 4th of July to everyone. Thank
you. Yep, you got it. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Let's take a short break, and then we'll get back to the phone lines. We got one open line right now, 800-348-2551, Vox Pop, Freedom!
Support for WAMC comes from the Cooperstown Summer Music Festival, presenting opening night, July 8th at 7:30 p.m., featuring festival artistic director and flautist Linda Chases and classical guitarist Jason Vio, CooperstownMusicFest.org. NBT Bank, offering personal banking, financial planning, commercial and business banking, nbtbank.com, member FDIC. Hills Alive, a festival of the arts. Four Southern Vermont arts groups presenting a schedule of stage productions, concerts and plays in venues throughout the region, hillsalive.org. The Executive MBA at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, integrating innovation, entrepreneurship, and leadership, plus an international residency, ewp.rpi.edu. In Agway, Claverack, Chatham, Millerton, and Great Barrington, open 7 days with propane fill-ups, garden supplies, pool supplies, outdoor furniture, pet food, and feeds and more, agwayny.com.
You know, as a side note, I enjoy the freedom to grill some steak tips and have a couple of beers tomorrow. I think that's going to be a good thing. Weather-wise, looks okay. Maybe a thunderstorm in the afternoon. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 on this Independence Day Eve. We go to Bill in Hurley. Bill, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Terrific show. I look forward to it every day.
Well, nice to have you here.
I just wanted to say I'm about 60 years old. I first realized that our freedoms were being repealed, probably because I was just mentally waking up. And that was in 1973 when it became mandatory to wear seatbelts in our automobiles. And I'm happy to say I only got caught once in the last however many years that is, and it cost me $85. But I guess my point is I'm trying to make is brings up insurance companies. Is it really the government or is it the insurance companies that are ruling the government? You know, that was my awakening, is that first $85 it cost me.
Interesting.
And here again, the mandatory insurance is becoming another current issue in politics as we speak. I guess that makes my point. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. I appreciate that. You know, I think some of that falls under states' rights, and I think the framers, as I read them, and of course I'm not Stephen Gottlieb or any of these constitutional experts, but the framers, I mean, they had a pretty strong feeling on states' rights. So I think in California or in some places, you don't need a motorcycle helmet, for instance. So that's, yes, the insurance companies are involved, but certainly states' rights involved as well. Chris in Albany. Chris, you're up.
Hi. I don't think we have to look much further than New York City, for example. Obviously, with Bloomberg and the soda tax idea, banning sugars, banning salt shakers on tables. I know that when I was there, we tried to move two tables together. We were told that in New York City, that qualifies as a fire hazard because they're only approved for a certain number of tables in certain sections. By combining them, they're changing that number. I mean, they have removed common sense.
I am with you 100%. I agree.
Stagger around and be protected from other people, objects, stairs, everything. They just expect to be able to text, listen to music, keep their head down, walk around, and magically everything will be okay. There's no more personal accountability.
Agreed.
You slip and fall, you sue the homeowner. You don't have to pay attention because there's ice on the ground. You're free to just slip and fall and sue the homeowner. And that's because government has enacted these laws, but it is not specifically government's fault because the people have not only gone along with them, that the people applaud these measures because they feel that's going to protect them. Instead of taking personal accountability, they would rather that the government, at least in some states, in some cases, New York, I think, is an exceptional case, to theoretically protect them, even though it's stripping away their personal freedoms, which maybe they didn't value that much to begin with.
You know, I'm 100% on your page, and I think it goes back to that little bit I read about from George Washington, you know, morality. Also, you could read personal accountability. It's vital for a free society.
Yeah, it should be innate. It shouldn't have to be something that's taught. The government should have to justify every time that they want to take away the right. Every time Bloomberg wants to say, no salt shakers on the table. I'm not saying there necessarily should be a referendum. I mean, the fact that he has a third term is certain in and of itself. But once they want to do something like this, to get into your life that deeply, there's nothing left. Abandon everything. Stop thinking you're in America. Change states. Change cities. You have a guy that is literally willing to ignore the Constitution, in my opinion. The stop and frisk. I mean, my God, is the Fourth Amendment dead? Is there nothing sacred in the Constitution at all? The Second Amendment. I happen to have a pistol permit. When I go to New York City, I have to disarm before I go there. My permit says New York State on it. But because you go to his city, you have to disarm before you get there. There's just countless examples for people that are on the left and the right that could empathize with.
Now, I have relatives who are gun owners as well, although I am not. Now, in Washington, D.C., that has changed, though, right?
I went to college in Washington, D.C. in 2003, and I tried to register a shotgun. That was a experience that I wouldn't take up too much of your time for.
Well, you got to move on anyway.
Although theoretically legal in D.C., it's cost prohibitive for the average person. On top of that, the limitations on the types of firearms, the waiting period, there are no gun stores allowed within the District of Columbia. So you have to exit the city. There's one firearms licensed person in the entire District of Columbia for 528,000 people. So you have to go through him. He has to order the gun, theoretically, from Virginia, have it transferred in, and then you immediately have obligations that the average person could never meet. It's just set up for failure.
And yet, remarkably, there are plenty of shootings in Washington. Isn't it amazing?
When I lived in Washington, D.C., I heard more gunshots than you can hear on a gun range on Saturday. It's outrageous, the amount of gunshots.
Well, Chris, try to have a good Independence Day, my friend. I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
See you. 800-348-2551. Anthony in Saugerties. Anthony.
Yeah. My comment is that I don't think that we are free unless we work in a democratic workplace. We 8 hours a day, we go into a workplace, and basically it's an authoritarian structure, a dictatorship of capital over labor. And until that changes, we're not really free.
But, I mean, isn't that the way a business model works, you know?
Here it does.
But where else would it not work that way?
What I'm saying is that we have to change that. That there's no reason that it takes both capital and labor to produce things. So why is the bias on decision making all on the side of capital?
Well, isn't that what unions are for? Isn't that why there is a union?
There are unions every place, and unions are under attack right now.
All right. I'm with you. Thanks, Anthony. I appreciate it. Let's go to Howard in Del Mar. Howard.
Good afternoon. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Wonderful. I have to have three comments, one about two people who spoke before me and one of my own.
Okay.
It seems that the freedom to some people are their ability to carry arms. If that is restricted, therefore they are not free. The other one who called just before me, you know, he wants to not have the eight-hour work day, all that stuff. So then the freest people in the world are those who are very wealthy, those who don't need to go from 9 to 5, whatever it is.
Yeah, or hunter gatherers, I suppose. If you went out and picked berries, you'd be all set.
The other thing that I want to comment on my own,
sure,
is that our freedom, our so-called freedom, quote unquote, is what we are able to do or not to do according to the Patriot Act, because that is our constitution at the moment. We have to adhere to the letter of the law, without any spirit of the law, to the Patriot Act. And we have been watched and recorded and listed, all kinds of things about that kind of thing, you know, throughout the whole thing. We are all suspects in this country unless we prove ourselves to be innocent. I mean, you know, I mean, you have the racial profiling in the city, you know, in New York City, where the police can stop anybody who doesn't look WASP or whitish, you know, to have him frisked and to ask him why. And of course, now we have the law in Arizona about, you know, you have to have documentation with you at all times, you know, to prove that you are indeed a viable and bona fide citizen of the United States. You know, this is not the kind of freedom that our quote-unquote founding fathers wanted. The country was open. Everybody was welcome. Now we hold ourselves, hey, don't come because we don't want you. You take this and you take that. Now the people who can come to our country are the people who can buy a $500,000 house and who can open a business. That's the kind of people that we want here.
Now, if I may, and you, yes, feel free not to answer, but based on your accent, I would suggest that you are not originally from this country.
I was born in Switzerland, but both my parents are from the United States.
I see. So there was never an immigration issue with you.
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, Howard, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Enjoy the holiday. Let's go to James in Monroe. James.
Hi. I was just commenting on your freedom. I've always felt free. You have, like, it's like in the religion there, in the Catholic faith, where you have your freedom to do right or wrong, which everybody seems to want to tell people what's right or wrong or what they could do. But in this country, it's, you do have your all the freedom you want. It's just how much you want to invest in your time, your money, and your agony or victory in it. People died there. I always thought them as freedom fighters, and people today, they're worried about the, you know, the swimming pool, this and that, and they let their freedoms go more and more. It's not their freedom is taken away. They're giving it away. They don't care.
I think you're onto something. James, thanks a lot. Let's go to Bob in Manhattan. Bob.
Hi. You wonder why I might be calling from Manhattan. You think that the signal goes all the way down here. Well, I listen on the internet.
So ah, good for you.
Yes. So anybody, anywhere in the world, even France, can listen in and call in. I just wanted to tell you that my view on our freedom is very much that France, it was instrumental in the early years, and that without their help, the British would have been able to lock us off on the high seas and would have strangled us, and we would have lost the war of attrition.
Yeah.
And after getting independent in 1984, it was still touch and go. I mean, we were fighting against ourselves. We had little rebellion so that we had to, you know, have a constitutional convention in 1987. And that was under the guise of, you know, making free trade amongst the states, because each individual state thought of themselves as a little country with their own little money. They had their own money, with their own trade laws, so they could put tariffs. Pennsylvania could put a tariff on New Jersey and vice versa.
Yep.
And that makes no sense when you're so freaking small. It only makes sense if you're a big trading power, the tariffs. So the smart guy said, this is stupid. We need a stronger central government. We did all that stuff. And today, we see these Tea Party people with these tri-corner hats talking about that. Well, that wasn't all of it. In 1812, 200 years ago, we were stupid enough to declare war on the biggest power, the biggest bully, the biggest beast in the yard, Great Britain. Now, we would have been crushed if Napoleon hadn't been running around. So we were saved by France again.
Okay.
And so I have a very French-based point of view in terms of our freedoms. Now, the third thing is, who are our founders, people with these tri-corner hats? Well, under our government, our constitutional government, the innovation is that usually the last law is the law that governs, so that if I pass Obamacare, and in 2013, a different Congress and a different president repeals Obamacare, then the repeal would take precedence. The idea with constitutional government is that you write a prior law called a constitution, and nothing can contradict the constitution except another thing passed through constitutional means.
Right.
So that ordinary law would be subservient to constitutional law. Now, constitutional law is what gives us our foundation. And today, we don't have slaves. Black people can vote. Women can vote. Those are all part of the Constitution. So those are all our founders. So we have a founder in the women's suffragette movement, the Elizabeth Cady Stanton, those types of people, they're founding people.
Yeah.
14th Amendment. Representative John Bingham, who was the principal drafter of the 14th Amendment, who overruled two main Supreme Court decisions, Barron v. Baltimore and Dred Scott. Dred Scott said black people, even if they're born in America, cannot be citizens. The 14th Amendment says if Congress nationalizes you or the Immigration Service through the power of Congress naturalizes you, or if you're born in the United States or under United States power, meaning if you're born in Panama, like, what's his name, the guy who ran for president, McCain, he was not born in the United States, but since the United States rules governed him, meaning his parents yeah. were citizens, he was on a military base, he was a citizen from the day he was born, so he was naturally a citizen.
Yeah.
So without that 14th Amendment, you could make all these arguments that McCain shouldn't be a citizen, you know, that black people shouldn't be a citizen. So all these people with tri-corner hats going out to only 1787, they're not the founders, because that entire slaveocracy has been overturned by something called a civil war. Our what? Government starts with the 14th Amendment. We should have people dressed like John Bingham.
You got to say though, the guys who did frame the Constitution made it so that you could add amendments yes. and you could make it a living document. And so I think that was the brilliance of the whole thing.
Yes, the amendment process enables you to change it. And they told you you change it this way, by passing amendments,
yep.
not by doing crazy things like the Supreme Court did in Lochner. We passed the 14th Amendment. They said, oh, the 14th Amendment grants everybody liberty rights.
Yeah.
And we're going to call a corporation a human being. We could use the word person so that people get confused. And then they have liberty rights, and therefore we can't tell companies what they can and cannot do. And it took until 1937, until FDR said, you are going nuts. We're going to pack the court.
Yes, and that's a great, you know what, that packing the court issue is one that I want to get Alan on and some guys who he talks to with the FDR history, because that's a very interesting chapter. Bob, we got to move it along, but thanks for calling from Manhattan. We appreciate it a great deal. Jill in Waterford. Jill, you're on.
Hi, Ray.
Hey, how are you?
Okay. I want to jump on the... something that a previous caller had said about freedoms and the fact that things like seatbelt laws and the laws that Bloomberg is trying to pass down in the city, all of those are infringing on our freedoms. And I agree with him 100%. But there's other areas, for example, when Republicans are saying that the health care law is infringing on our freedoms, and in other words, things that are trying to help us and save us from corporations.
Okay. Give me an example, Jill.
Well, for example, everybody is saying, well, do you want the government telling you what to do? Well, no, I don't want the government telling me what to do, but I don't want insurance companies telling me what to do either. And from the sound of it, from my perspective, the government is trying to save me from the insurance companies.
Well, I think either way, someone's going to tell you what to do, Jill. I mean, it just
depends
on where you get the letter. You're going to get a letter.
Right. But what I'm saying is, for example, the insurance companies are saying that after a certain dollar amount, I'm cut off. The government is saying, can't do that anymore. And the government is trying to keep people who have the insurance companies are trying to keep from having to cover people with pre-existing conditions. And the government is saying, nope, you can't do that anymore either. So there are times, to make a long story short, there are times when I think the government is actually trying to save us from a worse situation, such as insurance companies, credit card companies, things of that nature.
Hmm. Well, that's an argument, I mean, we could have for days and days. I mean, how far does the government go? Basically, you know, how far can they limit? Can they make someone buy insurance? I guess so.
You know, I mean, it's since people won't do it on their own, I mean, the government is making us buy auto insurance.
Well, the state government is. I mean, some places you don't need it, I don't think.
I don't know a single state that doesn't.
Isn't it California? They always were.
No, they require insurance.
Well, maybe now. Well, anyway,
but
Jill.
At any rate.
Yeah, I appreciate your call. What are you doing for Independence Day?
I'm going to a friend's barbecue. It's the same one every year. He lives on Clinton Street, and you can see the fireworks from his backyard.
Oh, so you have a good spot with no traffic to see the fireworks.
Oh, yeah. It's well, great.
You know, you're consider yourself lucky. We went out, took my kids to see the fireworks at a shopping mall parking lot about 5 miles away from the fireworks, and it looked like we were watching it from the moon. It didn't... It wasn't all that enjoyable, I'll put it that way. So maybe we'll do better this year. Jill, thanks
well,
a lot.
Good luck. Enjoy.
Yeah, we'll see you. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. More calls. We'll talk about freedom. What do you think it is? Do we have enough? Maybe.
Support for WAMC comes from Hildene, the Lincoln Family Home, Manchester, Vermont. Honoring land conservationist Darby Bradley, July 15th at noon, hildene.org. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, glaucoma management, and specialty contact lens fitting, visionexceleyecare.com. Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington. For colorful astilbe, daylily, delphinium, phlox, bee balm, alpine, and deer-resistant perennials, wardsnursery.com. PS21 Performance Space for the 21st Century, Chatham, New York, presenting Walking the Dog Theater and Anton Chekhov's The Cherry Orchard, Thursdays through Sundays, July 5th through July 22nd at 8 p.m., ps21chatham.org. In the Blue Deer Center, Margaritaville, New York, Plant Spirit Medicine Healer Training with Elliot Cohen beginning August 31st to September 7th. Retreat, discover, heal in the Catskills, bluedeer.org.
Wonderful sounds. Thank you, boys. 1-800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. We hit the home stretch. David in Cambridge. David, you're on.
Oh, hi. Hi there.
Hey.
This is, well, you know that this is Dave. You just said so.
Yes.
I'm the wise guy, drummer guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, the guy from Manhattan, how do you follow a call like that anyway?
Well.
But, For those who want to learn more, there is a movie that came out in 1994 called With Honors, and Joe Pesci playing what his character called a Harvard bum, trying to not be typecast as usually the character he gets typecast as, delivered a very interesting soliloquy to a hoity-toity Harvard professor being played quite aptly by Gore Vidal, and on how the Constitution is a living document, and it's just you know, if you can get a hold of a DVD and just kind of poke up to that scene, it's just worth the effort. It's brilliantly done.
Okay.
There is some colorful language.
Ah, well, I'm good at that.
So the reason why the seatbelt law went to touch on another caller, which
yeah.
is what made me go pick up the phone, is driving. And this also brings up an interesting issue about mandatory health insurance purchasing.
Go. Yeah.
As health insurance is considered by many anyway to be a right,
certainly not an enumerated right in the Constitution.
And this causes colorful debate, which I suppose has been to some degree settled by the Supreme Court, at least for now. But driving, on the other hand, this is a beast of a different color. Driving is not necessarily a right. It's technically considered a privilege.
Yeah.
And therefore, along with that privilege, you have, if you will, enforced noblesse oblige, whereas you are required in New York State anyways to purchase liability insurance in case you take out the baby carriage and your carelessness. It comes to responsibility that comes with the privilege of being able to drive a motor vehicle in the state. And the seatbelt law, technically, how the insurance companies argued that through and which side one wants to take, I don't pick one. But accidents tend to be multi-impact. So if you the first impact knocks you from behind the controls of the car, the car suddenly becomes an unguided projectile, which then goes up on the sidewalk and takes out the baby carriage. So you're right not to wear the seatbelt infringed upon the rights of the occupant of the baby carriage not to be hit by your car.
Interesting.
So,
well, what about, all right, let me ask you this then, since you happen to be undoubtedly the smartest drummer who's ever appeared on this program, let me ask you this.
I like the zucchini guy, but anyway.
No, he's pretty smart, too. He hasn't been on this show, so I can't give him that. So, the Fourth Amendment. Now, as long as we're on cars, how about sobriety checkpoints? When I was younger, they were never allowed because of the Fourth Amendment. Now they're commonplace everywhere. What's your take on that?
Brush me up on the Fourth Amendment, because I don't have instant recall. I know stuff.
It's, you know, unreasonable search and seizure. That's that provision.
I suppose it's a bit of a shade of gray, really. I do like Sheriff Campbell when he was tell everybody, guess what I'm going to be doing this weekend, and the news anchor said, I think it was on Channel 13, she said, well, isn't that going to be defeating the purpose? People will know where you are, or you know when you are, and they'll just be careful and maybe not drink. And he goes, no, he said, that's the purpose. The purpose is not to see how many people I can arrest. The purpose is to save lives. And if people think twice before they drink and drive, I might be able to, God willing, save a life or two. I don't know. I'll have to think about your question.
Well, David, thanks a lot for the call.
Yeah.
Have a great holiday, my friend.
Sir?
Yeah.
Just quickly, before you hang up, I was talking to you about your station wagon, your Chrysler Town and Country, and how you save brakes by downshifting.
Oh, you were the guy?
Yeah, but whatever you do, make sure before you downshift that you haven't downshifted already. Because when you put the thing, the next detent is low, it means low.
No, so. I got to tell you, I would never do that in an automatic. No, I used to do it in my stick shift, you know, my little car way back when. I wouldn't do it in an automatic. Oh,
it'll work. It'll save you brakes if you go down from overdrive into just regular drive.
Yeah.
But the next one down, don't do that unless you're going really slow.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Have a great holiday. Let's go to Jim in Albany. Jim.
Hey, hello, Ray.
Hey.
Great idea for the 4th of July program on freedom, and I thank you for the Washington's farewell address. You could do a whole program on that.
It's a great piece of writing, and I would love to have actually heard it.
Oh,
but that would make me very old, so I guess not.
Yes, it's about the closest that he could come to make a strong statement in favor of education, although he didn't use the word education for this reason. The plantation owners in the South did not want education in the federal constitution, although, of course, John Adams put it in the Massachusetts state constitution. New York followed Massachusetts, and the northern states all had a provision for education. But the plantation owners did not want the people in general educated.
Hmm.
Washington does mention the general diffusion of knowledge. So that's about as far as he could go without stirring up the plantation owners down south. But it's a powerful statement, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, the other thing, now that you bring that up, he saw that 60, 70, 80 years down the road, the U.S. was going to face a civil war. I mean, he counseled against various regions turning on each other.
Ray, that's one point of view. I think another point of view is that Washington and the other founders all look for the emancipation of the slaves through education. That was the key. Gradual progressive improvement. John Adams laid the foundation for this in his Defense of the Constitution, 1787, 1788. He stressed gradual progressive improvement through education. I think the other founders agreed with Adams. So I think you can make a good case where the founders all thought that slavery would gradually be removed.
Very good call, Jim, and tie into the revolution. That was very nice. Jerry in Schenectady. Jerry.
Yeah, hi, Ray.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Good.
A lot of people think, they dislike the government because they think they should have as much liberty as possible. And this just a reminder to them is before we had society, when people were in the state, so-called state of nature, they had as much liberty as possible right then because there were absolutely no laws. Nothing was illegal.
Right.
And people voluntarily gave up that condition because they were suffering from the liberties of other people to do whatever they wanted to them, and they had no defense against it. So that's one reason why we don't want as much liberty as possible.
Right.
What we should have is as much liberty compatible with a similar amount of liberty for everyone else. Another perspective is in the four freedoms of FDR, he mentioned the freedom of speech, the freedom to worship as you see fit, but also freedom from fear and freedom from want.
Right.
And right now in this country, I'd say there's a we're lacking a little bit in people's freedom from want because with health needs and financially, a lot of people are lacking.
Yeah.
But this I think justifies the idea of sobriety checkpoints is people should have the freedom to be able to drive safely on the road.
Interesting.
Pardon me?
I say interesting. Keep going.
And also going back, I know the Declaration of Independence, which isn't technically our law, but we're listed to have the rights of, or we're mentioned to have the rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And to the guarantee of those, that also requires laws from people being able to infringe on those rights in various ways, which a lot of times they don't like, but you know.
Yeah.
They seem to be a reasonable set of rights that we all have.
All right, Jerry. Well, a well-thought-out call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Suzanne in Dutchess County. Hi, Suzanne. You're on.
Hi. I just wanted to I think about this corporate, corporate situation with the Citizens United and the corporate state and all that kind of stuff. And the government is so full of red tape and difficult to deal with and uses up our money in ways we don't want. But on the other hand, I feel I can have, there's at least a mechanism for me to redress problems, somebody for me to write to, and some hope that there could be changes in a positive way. Whereas with the corporate, the more things that we turn over to privatization, especially things without faces, it's one thing if your town gets the local builder to fix the road, you know, and they contract it out. But when your government has, bridges made by other countries that you can't see and corporations that, you have no idea that they also own the local stores or the food products that are in you, it's too big and there's no face and there's no way we can ever make any changes in that. We're absolutely powerless in the corporate state, even though some of the conditions may be nicer from day to day.
So what would you do?
Well, I think we have to really realize that, and we have to try to make our government a little more effective, bring more things to a local level, And I think in general, although this is not the answer, whenever things can be smaller or in smaller units, it should be. I think I'm not for banning things, but I would love to see some of the multinational countries and companies be smaller. I don't like the fact that the people that might be making my medicine are also the people that, are making my macaroni and cheese. It's confusing to the average person. They don't know how to figure out what's going to be good for them in the long run and who's paying what. We don't know what companies. It's just too hard. And so I think, for when you're trying to live the rest of your life. And so I think if they want us to participate, which maybe they don't, then I think that we have to insist that any time that there's an opportunity that the corporations be by law have to share, be open. I don't mean share all their funds. I meant be open about information, where they get their money, where they're making their money, what they're paying, all that kind of stuff, what they're putting in their products. If we have to deal with them, we have to insist every turn of the times that we get a chance to insist and not to let them have one charter and then they go out and have 50 other businesses under one charter.
All right.
But let me just say about the sobriety thing. I hate that, and I never drive drunk, and I barely ever drink even, but I just hate the intrusion.
Ever had to go through one?
Oh, yeah, more than once, but usually I'm pretty good at remembering now that it's the holiday weekend or where they're going to be. And I like the idea that of the prevention. If you've ever traveled on the Jersey Turnpike, many times they'll take one trooper car and he'll just go back and forth sideways, across all lanes just to slow down. He'll slow down hundreds of cars, by just going the speed limit. And all of a sudden everybody gets the idea, and the whole traffic went from 80 to 60,
Yeah.
And he's, instead of picking one person out for a ticket, I think it's very effective. But this thing, I think there's better ways to do it. Why don't they sit outside the liquor stores at 10 o'clock at night and watch many of the young men go in and buy cases of beer at 10 o'clock and then drive? To me, they have provocation by being in a place that people are likely to be using or abusing liquor.
Yeah.
Now, that does require some judgment. But to just go out on the road and interfere with everyone else, I think they should have to prove individually that I'm really a danger.
All right,
I'm in a dangerous spot, because I think that it's become a big bureaucratic thing, and they're all so pleased with themselves. And I like to like the cops, because my mother taught me the policeman was my friend, but those kind of intrusive things really don't help them.
Well, Suzanne, thanks a lot. Have a great holiday. We go to Sam in Altamont. Sam.
Yes, I've learned a lot from my mother, who grew up in the Great Depression. She's in her 90s and still very smart. And I love listening to her talk with my very conservative in-laws.
Okay.
She challenged them years ago to come up with one industry that is regulated now that didn't deserve it. Currently, it's the healthcare is the big thing. But when you get all around it, there's always resistance to change. And I love it when she does it, because she backs up with fact and actual examples.
Yeah. All right. Can you put her on?
Unfortunately, no. She's out in central New York at the moment.
Okay. All right. Well, you could get her to listen online, and I appreciate that. Let's go to Gordon in Syracuse. Gordon.
Hi. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Good.
I believe that we've sacrificed our freedoms of the nation because we've allowed corporations and money to have such a huge role in who gets elected, both at the local level and at the national level. And I think that the fact that the people of the United States have allowed that to occur and has become such a controlling factor in who gets elected, that we've sacrificed a lot of our, control over the government by allowing that.
So what do you do?
I think what should be done is there should be very specific limits based on the office being run for, right, from a small-town mayor to the president of the United States, on what any given person that wants that office can spend. And if there was a set limit, that makes more, from my perspective, a more level playing field, and it also broadens the number of people that would be able to run for that office, because from what I see, unless you're in a political family or you have resources, whether they be your own or through your connections, running at least for higher offices is out of reach of the average individual.
Right.
Making that statement that anybody can be president no longer true.
Certainly true. But if you limit the amount of money you can put in, then isn't it only the rich people who will run? I don't understand.
What I'm saying is, right now, people can spend unlimited amounts of money to get elected.
Right.
Whether it be donated by individuals or whether it be donated by corporations, which a lot of it comes from with these super PACs and stuff. If you say, if you want to run for president, you can only spend X amount.
Oh, I see.
And every other person that wants to run for president can only make a level playing field, as opposed to one candidate being able to spend $90 million, and the other guy, maybe he can only raise 10.
Yeah.
So now, because the guy that's got 90 has got more ads and so forth and so on, that, to me, has an undue effect on who might be elected. So if it was all even and you say, for this office, you can only spend so much, you, like I said, to some extent, level the playing field on how much exposure somebody's getting. If they're getting equal exposure, people would be more tend to listen to the message itself, as opposed to just, I've seen more ads from guy A as opposed to guy B.
Well, interesting idea, although I certainly think that there's a lot of money made on advertising, and there are a lot of commercial stations that certainly make their bottom line on that. So I think that...
Absolutely, but I'm not saying it would be popular, but I think it would be fair.
All right. Hey, man, thanks a lot. You got the final word today, and I want to wish everybody a happy 4th of July. The great country we are in. The fact that we can talk about this, the freedom to virtually assemble here on Vox Pop, it's a very good thing, and I appreciate everybody who called. Sorry if you didn't make it through this time. We will be back. We're off tomorrow. We'll be back on Friday. We have special programming. We'll be back on, let's see, what day is today? Today's Wednesday, right? Today's Tuesday. Okay, and then Thursday we'll be back. Okay, time for a day off. Support comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting American Impressionism, masterworks in watercolor and pastel, featuring works by Theodore Robinson and John Singer Sargent, arkellmuseum.org. Del Mar Place, assisted living residence, Del Mar, New York, providing care and support for seniors in the capital region, delmarplace.com. And Spectrum 8 Theaters, Albany, showing Hollywood, American, independent, and foreign films. Their Ultraviolet Cafe is next door for before or after the show, open daily September. Spectrum 8, I should say, Spectrum8.com. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Bruce Herbach answered the calls. Patrick Donjas, our producer. I'm Ray Graff. I will figure out what day it is, and then I'll see you on Thursday or Friday or whatever.